In this episode, we wait until Stuart is out of the country before watching the movie about nubile sorority sisters. We discuss Sorority Row. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
I'm Eric Zuckerman.
Yes, Zuckerman.
Is that what I said?
Well, I can't say it as well as you.
I believe what you said was Zuckerman.
I'm pretty sure that's a bad imitation.
I've been calling you Zuckerman all this
Zuckerman.
Time.
Zuckerman. Yes. What did I say?
But you say Zuckerman.
I say Zuckerman, yeah.
Oh. But Zuckerman is
but
acceptable.
But not Zuckerman.
Okay.
Zuckerman is the only one I don't like.
Superman.
No, I have been called that.
But Suckerman.
Well, in inevitable Flophouse fashion, we've alienated the audience right off
instant
the bat.
Instant tangent. Just add Flophouse.
The point is, before we got distracted, we were going to introduce Eric, our guest, who is stepping in for Stuart, who is nude on the Mexican Riviera
with his
as
lover.
We speak. Yeah.
I have no comment on that.
But and we tried to get in.
I have been, when you said nude on the Mexican Riviera, I had an image of Stuart in a backpack and pith helmet climbing nude up the side of a Mayan pyramid and shouting down to somebody who's taking pictures of him at ground level.
To his lover.
Yeah, I guess so.
Who's getting a good angle on his taint from down there.
Wow.
Anyway.
Is that what goes on this show?
Well, sometimes.
So, yeah, we tried to get the whole gang back together last week. But it didn't work out, partly because I was having no surgery.
You were having no surgery? Then what's the problem?
You need to enunciate better.
I was having nose surgery.
No surgery, yeah. I mean, everything's fine. A zero amount of surgery.
That pun would work if surgery was actually a word.
But you had an operation done on your nasal area.
Do I sound different, listeners? Write in and tell me. Whether the resonance of my nasal cavity is changing my voice.
Mm-hmm.
It does sound like your septum is less deviated.
Yeah, a little bit less deviant. Yeah.
Deviant?
It was living a deviant lifestyle
my
before.
My septum, the pornography that my septum has been looking at recently has been very vanilla.
Wow. Good to know.
But, Eric.
Yes, sir.
You are an actor.
I am.
You have had...
you've been in major motion pictures.
Speaking roles in Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds.
I have, true.
Baby Mama, that's another one.
True.
The Bounty Hunter in theaters now.
John Adams.
True.
The
HBO series.
Miniseries.
True.
Can you do the line that you did in either John Adams or War of the Worlds? I'll leave it up to you.
Okay. Wow. That's, you know, I mean, a lot of prep goes into the... I don't think I actually remember my the exact words of the War of the Worlds at the moment.
You're playing the character who's listed in the credits as Doomsday Guy.
That is correct. Doomsday Guy. In John Adams, I played Thomas McCain, Senator, or
John McCain's father.
Not no.
John McCain's son.
Well,
John McCain's granddaughter.
No. I represented from the great state of Delaware
not
to
that
the
great.
Continental Congress.
I mean, it's a great state.
Thank you.
So is the Delaware representative to the Continental Congress?
Yes, one of the three, but yeah. And my line in that, so I do answer Dan's question, I don't want to alienate him so early in the show, was, leave it to me.
But you said it with so much urgency.
Yeah, there was more urgency. But I'm not giving you the whole performance.
In context, it was really a beautiful moment.
Well, it was, yeah.
Elliot tipped this already, but I wanted to ask. Now you're in The Bounty Hunter.
I am.
Theaters now.
I am.
Starring Gerard Butler.
As yes. Dog.
No, that's not, no.
Now we have done.
As Boba Fett?
Two Gerard Butler films on the Flophouse. We did two, actually, in rapid succession.
Yeah, very close together.
Just a couple months ago.
Was that obsession, would you say?
Well, I want to turn that around to you and ask, do you think that you're ruining your career by appearing on our podcast?
Have you made a powerful enemy?
I don't think
You've
so.
You've awoken a sleeping giant, Eric.
Named Gerard Butler.
I don't. I don't.
He's got narcolepsy.
Interesting. No, I don't think. I hope not.
On the set, was it like hard to work with him because he was in the middle of so many anti-Flophouse tirades?
I didn't actually come up, I have to say.
Like these kind of Christian Bale level just rants against the Flophouse.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I don't know.
No, I didn't. I don't think. I mean, I'm. I don't think you're on his radar. I'm sorry.
Who did you?
Whose radar are we on then?
you're tuned into Hollywood. All the Hollywood players. Who's angry at us now?
Well, I know that. Let's just say.
I mean, we've had a long run. We've had a long running feud with Elias Koteas, but you know.
Well, that perhaps is because you're pronouncing his name wrong.
Listen, he should get a real name. They don't pronounce it right. You hear that, Elias?
So
this is why we've had a feud for a while.
I can understand.
Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie.
So for those listeners who have seen The Bounty Hunter in theaters now, who do you play in that film?
I play a cop who gives some information to Gerard Butler towards the end of the movie, so I don't want to spoil it for whoever, not that it's I could spoil it really, but
that would happen from the minute they bought the ticket for the Bounty Hunter.
Whoa! I didn't actually mean it in that context,
bread wagon.
That's
meal
not
cake.
What
his
I was.
Bread wagon. Never heard that before.
That's because it was me.
Listen, this is his meat bucket we're talking about.
You never heard it because that was me grasping for an idiomatic phrase that I did not have on the tip of my tongue.
That was not actually how I intended to say that, but...
This is his milk sponge here.
Yes, my... Wow. My Cracker Barrel, if you will. Mm-hmm. Delicious.
So, do you think that's a racist slur against whites, by the way, the Cracker Barrel?
I don't think so, no. It's anyway. A barrel full of crackers that you would have at a general store. People, we didn't always live in a world of prepackaged crackers, Dan.
Okay.
Sometimes you had to scoop them up out of a barrel.
So Gerard Butler seemed like a nice guy.
He did. It's funny. I actually, in the movie, I have a conversation with him over the phone. In reality, I did not. When I was shooting my scene, I had no contact with him at all.
Okay.
That's movie magic, everyone.
Hmm.
Movies.
Well, I just want to ask the question because.
But no, he did.
There's no personal hard feelings. No ill will that we bear against Gerard Butler.
No, he seems like a very nice, charismatic guy.
He was great. I mean, I met him briefly, but he was
fire agent is all we're saying. If you read your own scripts, get better taste.
Wow.
Now that was directly to him because he's listening. Is that
he listens every week, going, Flophouse.
You were telling us how he was so enraged earlier, so I assumed.
I'm pretty sure that was you saying that.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
But we could play it back.
No.
Okay.
Too much work.
You know what? Let's look at the tape. Yeah.
So the point of
or
this
not.
Long introduction is that we watched a film tonight.
Really? That was the point? Because we were dancing around that point pretty well.
And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the premise of the show, guys, but the premise is that we watch a movie that we assume to be bad.
But there, we hold out hope that it'll be good.
Hold out hope that it might be good, and then we discuss it round table afterwards.
Okay.
This table is a square. I can see you
I wasn't going to say it. I didn't want to embarrass
you. Well, the
on
magic
your
own of show. Radio, the audience can imagine that it's round.
Yeah, they were picturing it was round until you said it.
We're seated in a semicircle.
You could say that, I suppose.
Next to a cliff over a magical city, a kingdom of glittering castles and airships. It's a radio. They can know. It's not even radio. It's
sure,
podcast.
You're painting a picture.
Well, that's radio.
You're
of the future.
Whoa. Speaking of which,
yes, sir.
Robots all over the place. Audience can't see it. They're with us right now.
Anyway,
on this
we
cliff.
Watched the film.
What was the point you were making?
Called Sorority Row.
Sorority Row.
A remake
Sorority Row.
Of the 83 film, The House on Sorority Row, which I think I may have watched, but immediately, like when I looked at it on IMDb, I couldn't tell whether I'd seen it or not because all of those early 80s
sorority
slashers are so interchangeable.
But that one was a remake of Catfish Row, right?
Cannery Row?
Cannery Row. That's what I meant.
That was a good one.
I
like to think
I'm
that
an idiot.
20-some years from now, I will look back and wonder
you
whether or not
indeed.
I actually saw Sorority Row.
Yeah.
So,
I am going to write – I keep a list of – each year I keep a list of the movies I see that year. I'm going to write down this one, and I guarantee you next year when I look back on this list, I'll be like, what was that? Must have been a Flophouse movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting that they changed the title. I wonder if there's sort of like a double entendre, if you will.
What, like a row meaning an argument?
Yeah, so, you know, the house on Sorority Row is very clearly but the Sorority Row.
Is that a row?
Well, but it's the same word.
Yeah, okay. Sorority Row sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But also, like, maybe it's, well, you think Sorority Row, there might have been a row boat in it, but there's none.
No, I guess, I mean, as much as I scoff at your pun idea, it's the only way that this title makes sense, because like House on Sorority Row, you're like, okay, there's a lane full of sorority houses, and this is one of them. But just Sorority Row,
it sounds like it should take place in more than one house, but it doesn't. Yeah.
And it does not at all. In fact, there's not. I don't even think we see another house in the movie.
No, we see the interior of a therapist's modern house.
That's true. That's true. And there's a restaurant somewhere that's really dimly lit.
Yes, that a senator eats at.
Okay, but let's
sorry. Are we getting
let's sort of summarize the film. There's this group of sorority girls,
the Theta Pi girls,
seniors.
Uh huh. There's the nice one.
They're seniors at College State University.
No. Let's define them by their one trait.
Well, there's the nerd Ellie.
Uh huh. Played by Rumor Willis in her second sorority house themed film after the House Bunny.
There's there's the bitch who's kind of the leader of the group, Jessica. Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's Claire. She's Asian.
Yeah.
There's Chugs. Who we thought at first was named Jugs and then thought was named Chunks. But she is the drunk who is also a slut. And then there's Cassidy, played by Step Up to the Street star,
whatever. Rihanna Evigan.
Evigan. And she is the... She becomes basically the main character of the movie.
And there's also the soon-to-be-dead Megan, played by Audrina Partridge. Was that who?
I guess so.
I believe that
that's what
correct.
You told us.
TV's The Hills. A show that I have managed to avoid watching entirely.
It's weird, because I've seen a little bit of it, and it's like, it's a series based on The Hills Have Eyes, right?
I think
because it doesn't seem to be anything like
there
that.
There are hideous mutants in it.
There are, but they're not inbred hick murderers. They're just, you know.
Not hick, anyway.
Yeah, their mutations appear to be all plastic surgery based.
Right.
In the chestal region and the facial region.
Yeah.
They're not cannibals per se.
So the film...
per se, but in a larger social sense. Aren't we all cannibals?
But so the film begins with them...
it's a big party at the sorority house.
Yeah, and the girls have gotten together to do a hilarious prank on one of their cheating boyfriends.
Right.
It's Megan's cheating boyfriend.
And who's also Chugs' brother, Garrett.
Right.
And they have pretended to roofie this girl, right?
To have him roofie
her. They gave fake roofies to him to give to her so that they can teach him a lesson that involves her spitting up all over him and appearing to be sick and dying.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
or just like basically dead, like she overdosed on roofies.
Right? Yeah.
And they must dispose of the body.
Yeah, they're trying to play a trick on him to make him think that he's a murderer.
Uh-huh.
As sorority girls, yeah,
it is funny. It is funny thinking about it now.
But unfortunately, things go a little too far, and he ends up shoving a tire iron through her chest and actually killing her. Mm-hmm. Once they get to an old mining quarry that's been abandoned,
yeah,
true.
So... In this college town, at one point, the college town's main industry was a quarry.
Well, that's true of Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's a fun fact about Bloomington, guys. So they dump the body down, and...
they dump it into a big hole.
Yeah, and our Cassidy, is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah. Our nice girl, she wants to call the police, but everyone else worried about their futures or being pressured into being worried about the futures by the bitch.
Yeah, Jessica, the blonde one who's the bitch... spends roughly 75 minutes convincing them not to go to the police.
But by saying the same thing over and over and over again.
This is a very talky 40-minute horror/slasher movie.
And they convince Cassidy to go along with this by saying that they'll all claim that she was at fault.
Right.
If she does not.
Jessica's point, which you know, there's merit to, I suppose, was that why should all of their lives be ruined by one stupid thing that they did, which was killing someone.
Merely because they took the life of a friend. Why should they be the ones to pay? What's fair about that?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, more to the point, though, she would be more, I think, in trouble being, I think, the mastermind of the...
That's true. And also the girlfriend of the son of a senator, mm-hmm. who, as he mentions, there's rumors about him being a possible VP pick.
Mm. And he has the bland looks for it.
Yes. Yeah. He's like a movie senator.
Yeah.
You know.
And so 8 months pass, and lo and behold...
A baby is born.
Lo and behold, someone knows what they did last 8 months ago.
No, that's not a different movie.
Oh, okay. Someone is Final Destination-ing.
That's not even... I don't understand.
The
Rosemary's
Ring.
Baby. But
someone is Videodroming.
Okay, that they don't even get that reference, Elliot.
All right.
And lo and behold, people basically just start getting picked off, slasher movie style.
By a killer using a tire iron. With knives on the ends.
Mm-hmm. Pimped out tire iron, as one of the characters says.
Yes. Yes. And he has several of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He put a lot, there's a lot of, you know, he invested a lot in those tire irons.
Yeah, we watched it
time,
on...
Time, money.
We watched it on demand. We didn't have the DVD. I'd like to think that there was an extra on the DVD about the tire irons.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I would want to see.
Constructing a killer's tool, it's called.
Oh, that sounds good. I would watch that.
And I don't know that there's actually much to say about the movie plot-wise, though, because as you would guess, people start getting picked off one by one.
They get picked off one by one. The sorority girls are really irritating. Cassidy is trying to get to the bottom of it,
mm-hmm.
While everything falls apart around her. Mm-hmm. Carrie Fisher is in it, we didn't mention.
Yes, Carrie
she
Fisher.
Is the sorority house mother who shows up in about four scenes.
Slash space princess,
yeah. And she had... There's some, like... We can get to it after the plot development, but there's some okay kill scenes. There's a big sorority house party.
Mm-hmm.
A sorority house massacre. Huh? There's a sorority house massacre. That's another sorority house movie.
One of those.
Eric. Okay.
You don't need to lean in every time you have something to say. I set the levels.
Right. No, I know. But sometimes I want to be
pointed about it.
This is a
little peek behind the curtain.
That will be edited out. So there's a lot of craziness and zaniness, and they run around getting killed, and then eventually... Should we reveal who the killer is?
Please do.
It is Cassidy's boyfriend.
What?
Who will do anything to protect her, including murder.
But that's...
People.
But that's the one person who it would hurt our heroine most if it turned out that was the killer.
And yet it does.
Dun, dun, dun.
And they have to fight their way out. Her and Megan's sister and Ellie the nerd in a burning down sorority house,
mm-hmm.
To escape this... monster of a guy who did this.
And they do.
At the end.
Who was also the valedictorian.
He was also the valedictorian, that's true. He gave a speech.
He's so good at making
he gave a speech about how people will be judged by the company they keep at the graduation, and he realizes that his girlfriend keeps company with bitches, as he says.
He did say
now,
that.
It's unlikely in general that a valedictorian is a killer. However, it is more likely that a valedictorian is a criminal mastermind like this guy.
Yeah,
right.
Apparently is. I mean, he devised these tire iron based weapons and
his cunning traps.
Uh-huh.
A game of cat and mouse.
Yeah, where he would text people and tell them to go places,
and then they would.
And he would. He also had the brilliant idea to wear the robe that conceals him, but is also the graduation robe that everyone is wearing because it's graduation week.
Ironic, kind of. Not
I'm not
really.
Sure that's irony.
But
again, what you did last summer, where the killer is dressed up as a fisherman in a fishing village.
The exactly. Gorton's fisherman, particularly, I think.
I'm not sure.
Well, I don't think that he specifically looked at a Gorton.
I assume there's a scene where the killer picks up a package of fish sticks and is like, I found the answer I seek.
A package of fish sticks gets thrown through his window late at night, and he's like, I shall become a fish stick. No, wait, that's stupid.
Teen murderers are a superstitious and cowardly lot.
Yep.
They will fear me if I'm a fisherman. As the movie goes on, the characters seem to become more and more blasé about the murders that are being committed, until by the end... Jessica and Cassidy rush into a bathroom to escape the killer. They pull across the shower curtain, and the body of their friend Megan is hanging there, and it's almost half rotted away. Yeah. It's just a skeleton.
Desiccated.
One of her eyeballs is still in it. And it's disgusting. And Jessica goes like, "She looks terrible," and they don't even aren't even interested. Like at that point,
And it's no, but it's also like this weird ADR like thing. Like it's like this just like tossed in. It's like Watch Out for Snakes, so like that MST
in
thing.
EGA.
Yeah, it was like okay, we got to joke this up a little in post.
It's weird. This they very. It feels like they wanted to this to be like a Jennifer's Body type thing where everyone
Trash Fest.
And everyone's got like a sharp zinger, and there's right. a lot of like. You know,
although that didn't really kick in until the last third of the movie. Like the first two thirds, I don't think they were doing a whole
except
lot of that.
For Chugs. Well, Chugs always like, had that. Chugs had but that. Once Chugs died, I feel like everyone had to pick up the pace.
I don't know.
Pace
right the off the bat, of one of the characters is like, "Oh, you know, having sex with roofies, you get to have sex and a good night's sleep." Oh, and right. it's like, it, oh, "Ha ha 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 ha!"
It's
rape.
Chugs who says that.
Yeah, you know. And there was another rape. There it's was not the, Chugs.
It's
also,
not really like Heather's level. Of,
no, it's
not exactly.
Chugs also. Had
it's
the
not
great
exactly
line.
The Lady Eve level witticisms.
Chugs' other great line of "I don't want to play a game of find me, rape me."
Yeah, that's right. When her therapist that she gets prescription drugs from, she walks into his house.
He's apparently fucking everyone.
He's Dr. Rosenberg. That's yes. all we know about him. She walks into his bedroom and he's handcuffed to the bed. And he goes, "My last patient left early. But we could always finish off where my last session ended." And he offers her prescription drugs, and she goes, "Okay." And then, like,
well, no, she doesn't say okay. She's like, "Fine, fine." Like, yeah. She's like, "Just another depressing transaction of sex for drugs in the life of Chugs." You know,
that's Chugs. Da-da-da. But that's before the therapist dies for some reason, and
yeah, he gets it. He gets the,
and that
the first tire,
and that leads
actually.
To the best. Scene in the movie,
yes,
in my opinion.
Absolutely. Concur.
Which is Chugs' death scene.
Well, describe it, why don't you?
Chugs has picked up a bottle of alcohol from a table.
Sounds delicious.
And while she's waiting for the therapist to come out and have sex with her in exchange for drugs, this is a movie that was made. this is a movie for entertainment. And she's lying
teens,
down.
Teens, probably.
Yes. Well, it's rated R. That's the thing. I was reading up a little bit beforehand about this because I didn't know that much about it, mm-hmm. and apparently they were thinking of making this a PG-13 movie, and then decided to go all the way and make it an R movie,
rated
which
R.
is why,
mm-hmm.
which that, is why we see
Mr. Movie Phone,
which is why we see a very small amount of nudity, and they say the F word a couple times.
It's not that small. I would say for a modern horror film, there's a fairly substantial amount of nudity.
But for a horror film in general,
no. But I mean, that's encompassing such a. Such grotesque and wonderful highs in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, but anyway, so she's waiting for Dr. Rosenberg to show up to have sex with her for drugs. And she's lying down on the therapist's couch drinking out of this bottle, and then the killer appears over her and seems to take the tire iron and slam it against the end of the bottle
yeah.
so that it gets shoved down her mouth into her throat, then slams it again so it gets pushed even farther into her throat, and... what happens after that?
And you see the liquid is like pouring into her mouth, and then he hits it again, and then
like the bottle
blood.
Cracks.
Yeah.
The bottle cracks and kind of fills with blood.
But it's such a ridiculous death scene, and it's so much more – that moment is so much more horrifying than I expected anything in the movie to be. So.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was definitely – they got points for that.
Yeah. I mean, in general, one thing that the movie seemed to take a little care of was the death scenes.
Yes.
I mean, there was that, you know, there was the guy who was going down a dumbwaiter and was stopped by the
tire
iron going in right in front of him, and then it slowly shifted up so another prong of the tire iron would pierce his throat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The flare gun death was a little lame.
It was a little lame, but it got a few points for being in a bunch of, like, bubbles. So what you would see was this person being yanked under... this huge mass of bubbles. They had a cable tied to their leg, basically, and they got yanked under, and it looked like the beginning of Jaws, where the woman gets yanked under by the shark.
Right.
If Jaws had taken place in a big bubble bath.
If someone had dumped some Mr. Bubble in the sea.
The original script of Jaws did take place in a bubble
really?
Bath.
Really? I didn't realize that.
When
we gotta shut down this bath. It's the big season.
And in the Benchley novel.
That's right.
He was a big proponent of bubble baths.
But I do think it was disappointing. Like, Chugs was the first of the girls to go, and her nickname was Chugs, and she literally died, you know, chugging the bottle. And so it's just sort of – it feels like they missed something. They could have nicknamed
You wanted
people.
To be more of like a Seven scenario.
Yeah. You know, where everyone was
oh,
like,
everyone's hoisted by their own petard.
Exactly.
Yeah, where was the petard hoisting?
There was no petard hoisting. That's the point.
A lot of petards went unhoisted in this film.
Yes.
There was one petard at the beginning of the movie.
There
that
was
had
a petard
flap open, and they're well, just that was the, on a trampoline.
It opens in this huge sorority party at this sorority house. There must be 7,000 people at this party.
Approximately.
And there is a trampoline in the middle of the foyer with girls jumping on it, and they're in long underwear with the flaps in the back hanging open.
Yeah.
And there's something really hilarious about it because it's like, see, nudity, but at the same time they're wearing like prospector old long underwear, you know. Maybe the least sexy garment that's ever been worn under clothing.
Well, but true. It's not – let's make it clear though. It's not like bright red woolen.
Yeah.
Like
you weren't
going to
mistake
underwear.
Them for Walter Brennan. It wasn't quite that
I don't
extreme.
Know.
I mean, these were basically just like pink onesies with like an opening in the back.
I guess. I still think it was funny, but.
yeah.
But
Eric, you look like you have something you want to say.
No, I actually don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
I mean, there
that
isn't,
was a dead end.
There isn't too. I mean, the movie is very poorly directed.
Oh, it's very yes,
or very poorly shot. I guess we could say.
Well, I think it's interesting because I actually think, in a way, it's shot. Well, it's just it doesn't make any sense. Like it's very handheld and very like, you know, jumpy, which theoretically could create tension, except that it's not directed that way. The characters are all standing still. It's just the camera that's moving.
Well, and I give it credit at least on the sense that it's while it's handheld in a non-crazy way, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like it's not doing that thing that I really hate. In all modern horror movies, we're like, okay, if we like make it look like the shutter speed's really screwed up, or if we do like random flashes of light and like just like really quick
and
cuts.
They had like one moment of slow motion in the beginning, and then they didn't do that very much, which
yeah, I mean,
which gets overdone a lot.
It was a more classic mode of filming than most horror movies today.
Recently.
It's just that. The problem was they would shoot like half of a face or just a person's midriff, and you'd be like,
right.
"Where is everyone in relation to everyone else?"
Yeah, who is this? Well, and I forgot to mention the other best scene in the movie, as far as I'm concerned, which is Carrie Fisher's fight scene.
Oh yeah,
it was very good.
Yes. Well, any movie you can say that about Carrie Fisher's fight scene, you can use those words.
Well, she shows up back. I mean, we see her in the beginning, and then she disappears for a good 40 minutes or so.
Yeah,
and they
probably had like. A day of shooting with her,
right?
You know,
but they like
she had to prepare for her show off her Broadway one man show,
one woman show actually. They when it's a woman, they call it a one woman show.
Really?
Yeah.
When did they start that?
Women's Lib.
All right.
It seems like it'd be the opposite.
Yeah, that's
really.
I mean,
one person show.
Yeah, one actor.
Show. One person. Well, act.
Yeah.
One
right.
Thespian
we're on a
show.
Slippery slope, fellas.
Yeah.
Anyway, she just
ladies, write in and tell us what your calling your stage pieces,
your solo stage pieces.
Yeah.
But so she's like left them to have the house on their own. That's the tradition because they're seniors. They've just graduated. The senior girls get to free reign of the house
for one day,
for one night. And so she comes back, and they've of course had a giant party and trashed the place. Now, yes, a few people have been murdered in it. But I don't think Carrie Fisher knows
she
that
she doesn't
at this
know
point.
That yet, no.
Yeah.
And she shows up with a shotgun.
The pump-action shotgun,
yeah.
Yeah, and then she immediately she pops one of her charges in the nose with
shotgun. She hits Jessica in the face with the butt of it.
Right.
I mean, granted, Jessica has an axe that she almost swings at Carrie Fisher.
She does swing it at Carrie Fisher, she just misses her.
Yeah. But why she has the shotgun in the first place?
A little unclear.
And then she goes to the kitchen, and the killer is stalking her, and she's just blasting away with this shotgun, and she has like a million rounds in it.
Well, you have to think that, like, I guess Carrie Fisher, like, on her weekend away from the sorority house, she was down at the shooting range. I mean, that's how she gets out her.
Or
aggression.
She's a hitman or something, or a bounty hunter.
Could be.
Oh wow, I want to see that movie.
Yeah,
but also we should mention
sorority hitman.
For those of you that, when you watch these movies, have your cliche checklist, they did have a few great ones. One in that scene where her shotgun, of course, you know, she's shooting like crazy, and then it finally jams at the moment when the killer is
right
coming at
her.
Her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she almost gets it done in time, but not quite. There was also, earlier in the movie, there was a girl in a basement with a flashlight, and the flashlight, of course, starts, you know, getting dim.
Yeah.
Which I've never actually seen... that happened that way, where it gets a little bit dim, and then you shake it, and you get a little bit, and then it just dies completely. Have you ever had that
flashlight? I think I may actually have had that flashlight experience. I don't remember.
All right.
Okay. But, I mean, I don't carry around flashlights a lot.
But that's also, she's in the basement of a sorority house, and she finds, like, a corner of hell in it. Like, just, she finds a place where it's all lit red, and it's you know, they make it look like there's flame going on somewhere. Like, maybe she's reached just the hot water heater or the boiler, but it looks like there's, like, a blast furnace or a foundry, like, in the basement of this sorority house.
Now, Eric, you said that you worked with Carrie Fisher on like a Lifetime movie.
It was Oxygen, true? Actually. Oxygen. I did.
Oh. What was it called?
It was called Romancing the Bride. Actually, I did three movies for Oxygen. I had a little stretch where that was what I was doing. And I played a Mexican hotel worker. It took place in Zuckerman. Mexico. Yes.
Are you following Eli Wallach in the tradition of Jewish guys playing Mexicans?
Yes, well, that was my motivation, certainly. but no, it took place in Mexico. It was a I spoke no English in them. I mean, I had one line basically that was in Spanish, actually. So it, yeah, and
leave it to yo. That's what it was. Leave it to me, but in Spanish.
Oh, interesting.
Because you said your line and the other thing was leave it to me.
But no, they're different. I don't always say this.
Leave our amigos.
I'm not Schwarzenegger. Like, it's not like I have a catchphrase.
I thought that's your catchphrase. Leave it to me.
No, that's not. There was one line and one thing.
Everyone was waiting at home when Dan was like, can you say your line in John Adams? Everyone was like, yeah. And then when you said it, they went, yeah.
I have all these leave it to me t-shirts with your face on it that I was going to give out as prizes.
Wow. No. But yes, she was great. She played the mother of the bride, and I had a little bit of interaction with her, not a whole lot, but you know, she's a character. But she was great.
Character Fisher.
Didn't do that.
Nice.
Did you not see?
No.
Oh, really?
I mean,
did you hand her the script for Sorority Row? I have something that I think you'd be
no, but actually
for.
Thinking about it,
because
I was,
he's her agent.
Yep, I was saying you should really be a house mother at a sorority where things go crazy. But if that happens, bring a shotgun.
Well, this leads into the other question I was going to ask you, which is: now you work aside from acting, you work in casting.
Yes.
Now, watching this film, what were the big casting mistakes? How would you have cast things differently?
You can't look at it. I mean, you know, not to deflect your question, but that's sort of an unfair way to look at anything. I think a lot of people say a movie is badly cast when the reality is that it's just badly written. Mm. Like, I don't. I mean, they were certainly archetypes. They were certainly different girls.
Mm-hmm. One of them was Asian,
exactly, which stood out.
And
they
all had large chests.
Uh-huh. No,
but different kinds of large chests.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so. No, I think, I mean, this kind of movie, you know, I don't know. The casting didn't bother me, per se. Okay. I don't know. That's sort of an evasive answer, I suppose. There's just so little, I mean, there's so little to, the thing is, there's nothing to this movie. There was no, like, I mean, we were joking about it watching, like, a little at the beginning, that the Chugs character seemed to be, I thought she was bulimic. This is why I thought her nickname was Chunks, or Chucks.
Because
she threw up. She was kissing a guy. And he's like, you taste like vomit. And her response was, yeah, I just threw up. But I took a mint, so you're okay. which he didn't. He didn't then go through with.
I liked that moment because he's like a freshman. And they're in the kitchen of the sorority house. And she's kissing him. And says, you taste like throw up. And she says, blah, blah. And then she sits on the tile. And she's like, oh, I forgot to wear underwear. It's cold here. Will you warm me up? And he's like, I'm kind of grossed out by this. And like, I liked that there was one character in the movie who wasn't like, this is what I do, as I have sex. This is all about college, yeah.
You're reprehensible.
Like, I'm going to have some standards here, Chugs.
But we did not follow that guy.
I kind of wish the movie had been about him.
Yeah.
And 30 years later, when he realizes, oh, I could have had sex with that girl. Why didn't I do that?
Right.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Later on.
Yeah,
he's happily in a relationship, but he's still kind of like, oh man, I should have been crazier when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wistful character study.
And then he's like, well, she's dead. I can't have sex with her anymore.
She got killed in that horrible massacre.
Remember
on
that
Sorority Row?
Well, that's the thing.
Weird.
The end of the
guys. That guy, we didn't go to that party, right?
The end of the movie, they've rebuilt the sorority house that burned down, and it's like the next year, and there's a big party again. And it's like, did nothing get learned from the sorority massacre that took place?
That's the moral of the film. It's an indictment of the Greek system.
It certainly it is. It certainly is.
You mean democracy?
No,
I mean
Socratic dialogue?
I mean anal sex is what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Eric is shocked.
What?
Jaw dropped open.
Girl?
Flophouse Blue.
But no, it ends with the girl who's the daughter of the daughter.
Sister.
Sister, daughter. I had a Chinatown thing. I couldn't
spoiler alert.
Two apart.
to anyone who hasn't seen Chinatown.
Sorry.
Ghost Rider in theaters now.
But the sister of Megan, who's the one killed at the beginning, becomes a character. She shows up later and is supposed to, I guess, be a red herring that maybe she's the killer.
You're supposed to think she's the
killer.
Even
though she's like, I don't know. Like she weighs pounds. 80 pounds. And if it came out that she was the one killing these people, you'd just be like, what? That's insane. She could never actually do that.
Yeah. But she wasn't.
No, but she was bitchy. But it does. It ends with her having joined the sorority in the new house. The sorority that killed her sister, and also where she almost died in a fire and by tire iron.
Yeah.
And yet she's there with feathered hair, partying up.
Partying with the other Theta Pis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Theta Pi is the sorority, so.
And then there's a last shot, which implies that another character from the movie, the crazy brother Garrett, who you thought had slit his own throats and then been hit by – slit his wrists and then got hit by a car.
Well, you didn't think that. Those things did happen.
You saw it happen on screen, but you thought he was dead as a result.
Right, yes.
But that he is back.
Right.
As one of the gardeners working at the new sorority house.
And it's really not that much of a
surprise.
So it sets
it up for Sorority Row 2.
It was not that much of a surprise that he wasn't dead, because the one thing the girls were not very good at was making sure that people were dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Megan ultimately was, but they weren't all that sure that she was.
Well, they also weren't good at watching people who were only pretending to be dead. Because at the beginning, they're all like, okay, well, let's all turn our backs on our sorority sister who's pretending to be dead and walk off pretending to look for sharp rocks to dismember the body, which is absurd.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, we'll leave the distraught guy behind with the body, and then we'll just turn our backs. Have fun.
Next thing you know, he plunges a tire iron into her chest.
Yeah.
To let the air out of her lungs.
So that she won't float to the top of, I assume, water, but then they throw her into a dry well. There's really no reason. There's also, like, there are certain points when the movie just decides that it's not going to care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, Cassidy is being lowered into the hole that they dropped Megan's body in to see if she's still there, and she gets, and the chain that they're lowering her on breaks, and she falls to the ground, and she sees that on the wall in blood it says, Theta Pi must die.
Which shows a lot of commitment on the part of the killer, by the way.
That's, yeah.
Well, really... he was the valedictorian.
Okay.
Good point. And, he goes all out, A for effort.
But, yeah, oh, sure.
And then it's like, I don't remember, I missed if there was a line that was like, well, we've got some rope, like, she's just stuck at the bottom of the well, cut to the next scene. They walk back into the house. Mm-hmm, did she climb out? What happened?
I think she climbed out. That's my thought. I mean, I have my own. There are gaps that I fill with my own.
To be fair, Elliot, would the movie have been better if we saw her climbing out in a rope?
I think the movie might have been better if they had to deal with the fact that she was at the bottom of a well and there was a killer after them.
Yeah.
Listen,
that could have been the whole movie.
Listen,
right there.
If the wind
up movie for you, it's called The Ruins. You can watch that film.
If the Wind Up Bird Chronicle can have its main character at the bottom of a well for like 100 pages.
Spoiler alert.
Okay. Then.
Well, for all you Murakami fans.
This
spoiler alert.
Yeah, Haruki Murakami wrote Sorority Row, right? Okay. That's why there was a cat in it named Noboru Watanabe.
You did an uncredited polish along with the.
That's why the characters spend so much time making pasta and doing their laundry.
Well, it's also why the movie doesn't
make any
sense.
That's for all you Murakami fans.
Because he did a polish on it, but he did it in Japanese, and they never translated it.
Oh, I getcha.
Well, we should wrap up our discussion. We've been talking for a while.
We had a lot more to say about Sorority Row than I thought we would.
You always feel that way.
You're right.
You always think that there's nothing to be said about a movie, and then the tape starts rolling.
And the words just we record on tape.
Yes.
Dan has a DAT machine.
We're actually taping over a mixtape that Dan made.
He's got
so you might hear little bits of Tears for Fears or the string cheese incident.
I'm glad that your podcast listeners should feel good that I'm recording over my treasured memories.
That's right. He's got a circa 1987 boombox, mm-hmm. and he's got the record and play button pressed together.
He has to hold them down with his fingers, though. Right. They don't stay down anymore.
Yeah. All right. All right.
So, we're speaking into the tiny microphone slits on the side of the boombox.
What we do now is we render our final judgments before
God,
before consigning Sorority Row to the trash heap of Flophouse episodes. And the categories are: was this a good bad movie, a bad bad movie, or a movie that you actually enjoyed in some way? And I'm going to give you time to stew on that, Eric. And I'm going to go to Elliot.
Stew. See, he can't not
get
bring
Stewart
up Stewart
off his mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, wait. So is it my turn?
You.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I'm going to go as far as to say this is a movie I actually liked a little bit, but maybe it's just that my mind has been ruined by all the really terrible movies we watched before this one. But I'm going to upgrade it from bad bad to good bad. There were a couple okay kills in it. It went by very quickly. There's a lot of cleavage in it.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to Whiteout, this was a nonstop thrill ride.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just that this is coming after a couple movies in a row that were really mind vaporizing. But I'm going to give this good bad status.
Yeah, wow. Eric, do you want to weigh in?
So those are my three categories.
Or you can abandon them.
I may abandon them a little bit just because I think that it is I would put it in that category of it is exactly what you expect it to be, no better, no worse. Like, I always sort of hope those movies will be better than I think they are, but realistically, this is exactly what I expected it to be.
See, where I'm going to differ with you is I've seen enough bad movies that I can say that this is actually better than I expected it to be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel that way, too.
I mean, just because, like,
it's still crappy.
Yes, but so many modern horror, especially, like, teen horror remakes are completely boring. They don't offer any sort of
movie like Prom Night.
Yeah, they don't offer any sort of disreputable thrills. Like, what I have to say about this movie is, to me, it straddles a movie I kind of enjoyed and a good bad movie, simply on the basis of it seeming to want to be trashy. It's like making a few stabs in that direction.
Stabs.
Mm-hmm. Wordsmith, with ladies, snap them up.
With the kills and the cleavage and the some nudity and the just like silly like attempts of being like goofy.
And there were some real like over the top moments that were kind of fun.
There definitely were.
It had like, it's a movie where the characters have gone all through all the stuff and yelling, and then it ends with them like walking away from the burning house in slow mo while some kind of like, you know, girl pop power anthem plays in the background.
I think,
you know?
if they could have just cut like 10 minutes off of it and just moved it faster.
Well, that's
I think
the
it
problem.
Could have been,
yeah, there should have
been
less
really entertaining,
less talk and more.
The entertaining stuff
action
is, between it's buffered by long scenes of people talking to each other and saying absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So. It's like a video game that has really long like scenes between the levels.
Cut scenes.
Yeah, cut scenes. And you're like, I don't really care like what Samus Aran's father is doing right now. Like, we could just, I'll just shoot more Metroids, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't understand either. That's for all the listeners that don't get what you're talking about.
Metroid,
really?
One of the most popular video game series ever. Metroid.
Okay, well, how about this? I don't really care what Yoshi is up to. I just want to fight more Bowsers. How about that?
Yeah. Fight more Bowsers?
Yeah, you know, the Bowser family.
Okay. I thought, maybe some Koopas, some Goombas.
Whatever, I don't know.
Is that Super Mario Brothers?
Yes, okay.
Oh, he found a way.
Okay,
I saw the movie.
This.
I saw the movie.
Really, that's how you know the characters.
I don't care. How about this? I don't care what Ms. Pac-Man is up to right now.
Oh, I know this one.
I just want to eat more power pellets.
Asteroids.
Okay. No.
All right. We're moving on.
You know what? I don't really care what these Pongs are doing. I just want to Pong more Pong.
I feel like I should know that one. Give me a minute.
All right. So this is the letter section.
This is my favorite part.
We have a final few entries in the Give Dan a Hook competition. And I want to say, some listeners have discovered it already. I've put up a poll on the website to find
P-O-L-L.
I don't know why I found it funny.
There's something... He's laughing so childishly. There was P-O-L-L. I put up a giant erect penis.
It's the way you emphasized it.
Good enough. Snap him up, ladies.
I've put a poll on the website that people can vote on their favorite suggestion for my hook to make me a more memorable member of the Flophouse.
Because team. As we've noted many times on the show, Dan is the Leonardo or the Cyclops of the group. Mm-hmm. He is the necessary leader, holds us together, inspiring, noble, unmemorable. Nobody likes him.
Not thrilling.
Aww.
As opposed to...
I already have a catchphrase. Give it to me.
Yeah, exactly. You, in one episode, you become have more of a hook than Dan does.
So I'm going to... It's already on the website, but I'll put a link in this show's notes, too. And whatever gets the most votes, the person who made that suggestion will get fabulous prizes. But anyway, some last-minute suggestions from Ben, last name withheld. Mm. In the quest for Dan's hook, I think Dan should...
Right away, I'm watching that movie. the quest for Dan's hook. Four adventurers will join forces.
I think Dan should turn to his secret weapon... I happen to know that Dan does a good imitation of Sir Michael Caine, star of stage and screen.
It's true.
It is true.
My thought is that his hook could be rendering the final judgments in the style of various Michael Caine characters. Thrill as Alfie Elkins calls Powder Blue derivative claptrap. Wonder as Jack Carter trashes from Justin to Kelly for its terrible art direction. Dad, keep from wetting yourself as Alfred Pennyworth deconstructs Bratz to... The clickening. The possibilities are endless and will further cement Dan's place in the Podcast Hall of Fame in construction now in Pierre, South Dakota. P.S. Stewart left out the highest form of comedy in his criticism of the ugly truth, the animal double take. I trust this will be rectified.
Oh, I'm sure Stewart has much to say on the animal double take.
Yeah. Now, Ben was scooped a little by Ashley, who also put in Michael Caine as an alternate to her mournful sighing. But I want to bring up this Michael Caine thing because...
your hook is either an imitation of Michael Caine or mournful sighing.
Eric, you and I hosted a couple of comedy shows as Michael Caine and Bob Hoskins.
Yes, I did.
I saw one of those.
I played... Bob Hoskins, you played Michael Caine, which makes sense because we're talking about your Michael Caine impression.
Yeah, which I feel like I sort of slipped as I was reading, but...
Yeah, I haven't done... I don't think I've done my Hoskins since we last did it, which is a couple years ago.
Yeah. And
we didn't prep anything. This is probably not going to happen if you're thinking they're going
to
do it.
Well, to paint a picture for the listeners, it was a lot of us making fun of each other's film choices
in
character. As in, like... Well, you should know Super Mario Brothers, because I was like, I'd always be like, oh, did you learn that when you were on Super Mario Brothers with John Leguizamo? That particular style of acting that you were employing right now. And it would go on like
that. Right, and then I would respond in some way like Hoskins, about the Swarm.
Yeah, or, sure.
Jaws the Revenge. Cider House Rules.
No, that's actually, it's a quality film.
Well, we can argue it later.
We could, but I'm not sure that it would go well. But no, we invented a holiday in those shows, which was very proud of.
Oh,
because we hosted a July 4th show, but it was July 5th.
That's a holiday.
5th, but it was July 5th, and so we made it Good Riddance Day.
Yeah,
which was a British holiday. They celebrated. Good riddance to the Americans. Mm-hmm. And I'm now, like, Homeland Security is going to be all over me for saying this.
They listen to Gerard Butler and Homeland Security, the only people who listen to this podcast.
Well, especially because your hook for me is that I hate...
that you're a terrorist, basically. Yeah. That you're an anti-government... My hook for Dan that I've suggested is he's an anti-government gun nut militia member who loves... He lives in a cabin. He loves the Anarchist Cookbook. He puts out a newsletter called The
not
Golden
true.
Eagle.
I'm not sure that's a hook.
All right, we're running out of time, so I'm going to speed through the rest of this. Brendan, last name withheld, says, I didn't realize the Give Dan a Hook contest was still going, but since it is, here's my entry. Dan's hook should be hooks. Literal hooks. Dan can be the guy who has hooks for hands, a la Harold Russell from The Best Years of Our Lives. Think about it. Mechanical hooks will win Dan loads of sympathy and possibly even an honorary Oscar. Plus, think of all the sound effects possibilities. Is that a serial killer at the window? Nope. Just Dan's hook scraping along a chalkboard. Sometimes the best ideas are the most obvious. This is one of those times. Make Dan's hook hooks.
That's not a bad one. He was the only man to win two Academy Awards in 1 year for the same role.
That is true. Which is, I was going to say, what's the guy's name who wrote this in?
Brendan.
Last name withheld.
Brendan Withheld. The last name's like the middle name, right? So it's Brendan Withheld.
Yeah.
I feel like he got it a little bit wrong, implying that Harold Russell only won an honorary.
No, he also won Best Supporting Actor.
Best Supporting Actor, yes. So just, and so was also great
in Hollywood history.
He was great in Inside Moves as well, which he did not win an Academy Award.
Lastly.
He couldn't have been that great if he didn't win an Academy Award for it.
Brian, last name withheld, said,
"These are all the same family.
Mm-hmm, they're all related.
Damn it.
When is Elliot going to get his best friend Anne Hathaway on the show as a guest host?" Not as if Amanda wasn't a great guest. It's just if he's going to continuously name drop Anne Hathaway.
Never do. I never have.
Anyway, I think Sci Guy Hook wins just because it gives Elliot so much to work with.
Oh, that's true.
How is Anne Hathaway, by the way?
Don't know. Haven't seen or talked to her since probably my senior year, her junior year of high school. If we ever talked then.
So you're a year older than Anne Hathaway.
I am.
Everyone's on IMDb trying to figure out how old Anne Hathaway is and then figure out how old you are.
But they could just look up how old I am on IMDb because I'm right there.
Ooh, I've been an IMDb fan.
Or Wikipedia.
You're on Wikipedia?
Yeah.
With your age?
I mean, it says what year I was born.
Well, that, yeah, that's
so Elliot's one up on you because you're just on IMDb.
I'm on IMDb, but I don't have my age on IMDb.
Actually, a lot of today at the office was spent, we figured out the IMDb fame tracker system or star tracker, whatever it is, and we were seeing who in the writing staff is more famous than who else in the writing staff.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you were going to game the system to make you all much more famous.
No, no way. We were just trying to see who's famous. Okay. I was right in the middle of the writing staff.
Huh. That sounds about right.
Probably because of the Flophouse.
Maybe.
It could be. Gerard Butler probably gave you a bunch of good reviews.
He puts a lot of comments on the page, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, guys, we should make our recommendations quickly of movies that we've seen recently and actually enjoyed that one might watch instead of Sorority Row, say, even though we kind of enjoyed Sorority Row a little bit.
But people shouldn't watch it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you like trash horror movies, it's fine, but I would recommend seeing a movie with sorority in the title from the 80s, because at least then you'll have a lot more gratuitous shower scenes.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me out to be the pervert, Elliot.
Someone's got to be. Stuart's not here.
I feel like you guys both gave it a more, you know, more positive review than I did, and yet I'm the one that would be saying, listen, if you think you want to see this movie, go see it, because it's going to be what, you know, you're going to get what you think you're going to get.
Yeah, that's true. But
I'm sure you have an old movie to recommend.
Sure. I think I will recommend what I saw. I have a recommendation and a plug. Bump, bump. My recommendation, I recently saw the original – not the original, actually. The first sound version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Frederick March, for which he tied for best actor with the star of The Champ.
Wallace Beery.
Wallace Beery, thank you. It's – a movie that has a bunch of really good scenes that are mixed in with a bunch of kind of dull, talky scenes. But it's a neat – it's worth watching and like occasionally like skimming through the talky scenes for the scenes with him as Hyde because he's so – like he looks like a caveman kind of. But he's still walking around London talking to people. And when the movie gets kind of violent and crazy, it gets really good and there's some neat – things that they do with the camera and neat editing things that they do and a really neat fight scene at the end, especially for a movie from 31, I think, where it doesn't feel as stagey as a lot of movies back then. It feels like a movie from the late 30s in terms of the camera work and the way it is put together as opposed to a movie from the early 30s. And that's probably because it's directed by Ruben Mamoulian, who was more into experimenting with what he was doing. So that's the one I'd recommend. Netflix. That was one I recommend. Flixing, or Netflixing.
Is that what they say? Is that
I think so.
Not what they say.
But if you're looking to see a movie in person,
just let them go.
then this episode will be up before April 7th, right?
Yes.
On April 7th, if you're in the New York area, I'll have my next closely watched film screening. It's the movie Kill.
Exclamation point.
Kiru. It's a Japanese movie from 1968, and it is a samurai action satire, and it's very good, and I'd recommend it. And cartoonist Evan Dorkin will be joining us to talk about the film afterwards.
Best known for Milk and Cheese.
Milk and Cheese, Dork. He just had a series recently called Beasts of Burden
about writer on,
house pets that solve crimes.
Space Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Eric, do you have a recommendation?
Well, I will go with the last movie. And I also on video I saw this or DVD. it's not watching
VHS. I watched mine on VHS.
Yeah,
so,
really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
It's coming back.
But a great movie. I'd seen, obviously, before, but I recommend anyone who hasn't seen it in a long time, North by Northwest.
Oh, sure.
Just, I loved it. I'd always thought it was one of my favorites, and I watched it again and was, like, blown away all again. Just when you see the movies now that are coming out that are trying to be these adventure sort of comedy, sort of venture, real thriller elements and all those things, and they just don't work, This is just such a fantastic example of how you make it all work, and a brilliant star turn from Cary Grant, and
they're all really good. James Mason really good. Is great James in Mason. That. Martin Landau is really good in that. Even Marie Saint's good in
it's
that.
It's all great, and it's just amazing. It starts so quickly.
Leo G. Carroll's
very good in it. Absolutely. Bernard Herrmann's score is really great.
Fantastic.
But Saul Bass's titles.
Terrence Lehman's screenplay.
All of these things about it are great. Hitchcock's cameo, trying to get on the bus.
The guy who piloted the crop duster.
Right, which, by the way, I didn't realize this, they had an extras. That wasn't planned. Like, that plane actually crashed and blew up. That's not true.
No, yeah, it was all planned. Hitchcock was not one of those directors where something would happen and he'd go, no, it was like, go with it, go it was like with Borat. It. Make it real, everybody.
It was like Borat. They just sent Cary Grant out there.
Cary Grant didn't know he was in a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
They made him think that he was framed for murder and on the run and that people thought he was a spy. And they just wanted to see what would happen.
Pretty much.
Well, I'm going to recommend a movie that is, at best, 1/8 the thriller that North by Northwest is.
Keep selling it.
So, all I'm saying is if you haven't seen North by Northwest, watch that. But
yes,
a newer movie that I watched recently that I actually enjoyed a surprising amount was A Perfect Getaway.
Oh.
With it had Steve Zahn.
Right. Timothy Mia Oliphant.
Jovovich, Timothy Oliphant. And it was written and directed by...
and that's an right, it's an elephant.
Timothy Elephant.
It was written and directed by David Tui, who did Pitch Black, which is a movie a lot of people like, and I think it's just okay.
I like Pitch Black.
But
it's no Chronicles of Riddick. But,
but it's a perfect getaway. You know, it's about a couple of honeymooners in Hawaii.
Wait, it's the honeymooners go to Hawaii?
It's about a couple of honeymooners in Hawaii who are walking a very like deserted trail to a deserted beach. And there's a news item about a couple that had been killed, and another couple is supposed to be responsible, and they encounter two other couples on this deserted trail. And, oh, my God, is one of them the killer?
Shoot to Kill.
Oh, I saw the trailer for this recently.
It's like Shoot to Kill, yeah. But with couples.
Yeah.
And it's Ralph Bramden and his wife and Art Carney.
It gets a little too cute with, like, some of the meta stuff about it, like... Mm. One of the characters is a screenwriter and sort of like references certain like thriller tropes, but
so it's Shoot to Kill meets Scream.
But they do have a lot of fun just like setting up real thriller plot points and paying them off. And most movies I feel these days like set up thriller plot points and then forget about them. So it's a pleasure just to see a movie that bothers paying off on things.
Well, that's good.
And I mean, I guess the twist to the film, basically in the opening credits, but it was still enjoyable even so.
Hmm.
It's a movie.
And yet you liked it more than North by Northwest.
No, I don't.
You said, and I quote, and I think the listeners will back me up on this, here's a movie that is 8 times better than North by Northwest.
That's absolutely what I heard.
Okay, well, while let's roll back the tape and look at that. But for now,
We're going to look at the tape? That's not going to tell us anything.
I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
I'm Eric Zuckerman.
Good night.
The rich rolling tones of Dan McCoy.
The rich rolling hills of Dan McCoy.
Do you have a mute button for us for like when we're getting out of the
I wish.
Can just go.
Nope, he doesn't, but he wishes, yeah.
I would use that on Stuart and Elliot so often.